The regular meeting of the Pismo Beach City Council, Tuesday, December 6th, is now in session. Roll call, please.
Mayor Reese.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Gonzalez G.
Here.
Councilmember Rabinal.
Here.
Councilmember Higginbotham.
Here.
Councilmember Natoli.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, invocation by Dr. Paul Jones, and please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Will you please stand and bow your heart with me? Our Heavenly Father, throughout our nation's history, our leaders have invoked the aid of divine providence during moments of trial and war. Nothing exemplifies this more than the image of General George Washington kneeling in prayer in the snow during the bitterly cold winter of 1776 at Valley Forge. Many of us in this room well remember the event that shook and challenged our nation 64 years ago tomorrow. It was Sunday, December 7th, 1941, early in the morning. The Japanese Imperial Navy and Air Force rained down bombs on the U.S. Naval Base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. 8 United States battleships berthed in the harbor were either sunk or badly damaged. It was a day of infamy that would long be remembered. Our President Franklin Delano Roosevelt declared war on Japan, and the United States of America was thrust headlong into World War II. But with our will to fight and our determination to win the war, 4 years later, the Emperor of Japan signed an unconditional surrender, and America was once again at peace. 9 years later, as a nation, we desired to honor our spiritual heritage and to show appreciation for God's protection and for God's favor. So in 1954, the United States Congress added the words, "Under God," to our Pledge of Allegiance. And 2 years later, in 1956, Congress declared our national motto to be, "In God We Trust." America remains today one nation under God. So help us to remember that God will continue to bless our nation and our city as long as we boldly affirm and believe in our heart, "In God we trust." And so it is in this spirit that we pray this invocation tonight. We are grateful that all of us may be a part of this public city council meeting. We invoke your blessings upon each council member. These are our friends. We have freely elected them to serve us, and we pray for them by name each day. Cause each of them to understand that they cannot properly discharge their responsibilities or their assigned task apart from your enablement. Bless them and their support staff with the strength and the security of your invisible presence. Grant to each of them your divine direction in their thought processes, for this will bring proper solutions to the problems and the needs that they encounter, and this will benefit each citizen and each guest in our beautiful city of Pismo Beach. This invocation we pray in the name of our personal Savior and Lord. Amen. Will you please place your hand over your heart and repeat after me? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is a proclamation, and Bill, would you start?
The City of Pismo Beach, this is a proclamation honoring the City of Pismo Beach firefighters for their fight against muscular dystrophy. Whereas the firefighters have been working with Muscular Dystrophy Association for the fight against neuromuscular disease for over 50 years, and
whereas in 2005, the U.S. firefighters raised more than $13 million throughout the country to support the Muscular Dystrophy Association's many causes, and
whereas throughout their daily service to communities and their dedication to the Muscular Dystrophy Association, our local firefighters contribute greatly to the well-being of all citizens, and
whereas in honor of the effort of our local firefighters,
The Muscular Dystrophy Association is sponsoring December 5 through 11 as Firefighter Appreciation Week.
Therefore, on behalf of the City Council of the City of Pismo Beach, I hereby proclaim December 5 through 11, 2005, MDA Firefighter Appreciation Week, dated the 6th day of December 2005. Mayor Mary Ann Reese, with the firefighters meet
of MDA, and we cannot thank them enough for all they do to help our association. Finally, I would like to present, I'd like to thank the mayor, rather, for presenting this proclamation to the firefighters and for their commitment to the cause until we find a cure for all of the 43 diseases that we cover. Thank you again.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is introduction of some new employees. Could the management individuals who would like to introduce those employees?
I'd like to ask Commander Scott Smith to come forward. Scott.
Madam Mayor and honorable members of the council, I consider it a great honor to introduce the two new members of our police department. And first will be Linda Moles. Linda was born in Dallas, Texas, and comes to us from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, where she was a records clerk there for 8 years. While at the L.A. County Sheriff's Department, she worked on various specialized units, including the COPS team, the Vital Intervention and Directional Alternatives, the Lancaster Community Appreciation Team, and Target-Oriented Policing and School Safety Units. She's very experienced. We're very lucky to get her. And she just recently moved to the Central Coast with her family.
Welcome, Linda.
Next is Officer Greg Roach. Greg was born and raised in Santa Maria. He attended Santa Maria High School. He lettered in varsity sports of football and volleyball. He graduated from there, did some work in construction for his uncle's company, then attended the police academy at Allen Hancock in Santa Maria. He has completed the academy. He was hired by the Pismo Beach Police Department, and he's currently in the field training officer program.
Welcome, Greg.
Would either Greg or Linda like to say anything?
I would just like to express how lucky I am. If those blinds were open, you know, not many people get to go out and work in a community like this. And I look forward to serving and protecting and working with all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dennis Delzite. I'm the Public Works Director, and I've been up here with Brian Henson several times. Brian started with the city a little over 7 years ago at an entry-level position. He likes to joke about $7 an hour in bagging trash, and here he is. I'm so pleased to introduce him as the Public Works Superintendent. Brian was elevated several times in his short but successful career with the city, and I previously introduced him to you as the interim public works superintendent. Brian has a bachelor's degree in management, and he's very enthusiastic about public works. He's received strong support from the people that work with him, and it's especially enjoyable for me to see good people like Brian have an opportunity to move up in their career with the city.
I just wanted to stand up and say thank you for the opportunity. I've enjoyed working for the city of Pismo Beach. I look forward to the new leadership challenges and opportunity this position has to offer, in addition to serving the community of Pismo Beach and its visitors. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. We're very happy to have you here.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is public comment period. This is the time for the public to comment on any items that are not on the agenda, and I have no cards before me, which is a first. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak to any items not on the agenda?
No.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Rick Rensick, 369 Santa Fe. I would like to ask the city attorney and or the city clerk as to what are the legal requirements for the posting of the agenda items. Is there a time period? Do you have to do it 2 days, 1 day, 2 weeks? Provide you with the time frame that it really takes to research some of these issues. And I know that it puts a workload on you, and I was wondering, is there any way that we can get the packets to the council a little bit earlier as opposed to just Friday afternoon or whatever, and then they have to work really hard through the weekend? Is that possible?
Would you like me to answer that?
The staff certainly can answer that, but I think if the council was concerned about it, they certainly would ask for it sooner.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard a number of not only the council members that are sitting in front of me right now mention that that is problematic to you, but also previous council members bringing that up in the past. So I thought it was worth mentioning. The other one is I'm going to probably go against the grain, which is not unusual for me to do, but I've also recently heard that the city council members only make about $300 a month. And personally, I think with the workload that you put in, number one, it restricts the number of people that actually can serve the community. And I know that there's a fine balance between serving the community and doing it all for the right reasons. However, there's also a financial reality that I personally would be in favor as a member of this community to have you discuss that, to upping it to $1,000 a month. And if that raises our cost of doing business in our city, $60,000 a year, I think it would be worthwhile. But that's just one person's opinion. Thank you.
I thank you for that. I think we are limited in terms of the number of dollars that we can draw for the size city we are, but I will defer that to the clerk or the city attorney for a response. So
the compensation is actually set by state law for the size of the city, and absent legislative change, we have very little discretion in how high we can put that.
I think that we have talked about maybe trying to raise our salaries, and we might put it on a future agenda, but we're not able to do that for this council. We'll have to wait till a new council is seated, but we can raise that.
Thank you very much for
Thank
your time.
You. How about a new car? Okay, is there anyone else who would like to speak to the council on an item not on the agenda?
Madam Mayor, Honorable Council, Art Anthony, I live on Coral Court. Since this is the first meeting you've had since the work was completed on surface sealing of James Way and Shell Beach Road, I thought it would be fair for me, as I was one of those who was complaining about them a few months back, to say how pleased I am to see that that work has apparently been completed. Some folks may think that there's a little roughness to some of the surfaces, but that was not the idea. The idea was to seal those streets so that water would not get through the cracks during the rainy season and cause further damage to the subsurface. And in that, I believe both of those streets have been properly done, and the striping job is very nice. So I would say to Dennis Delzite and all of his troops, especially Greg Gray, thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to an item not on the agenda?
Paul Jones, 941 Schaefer Lane. I would just like to continue what Art Anthony just said. I drive up Wadsworth twice or three times every day, and just today they were finishing the yellow striping. And I'd like to say thanks to all of you that made this possible with the tax dollars that you use so wisely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to an item not on the agenda? Seeing none, we will move on to the next item on the agenda, which is City Council comments and requests. Who would like to start? How about Councilman Natoli?
I really have nothing that I want to talk about tonight. So I'll yield my time to whoever wants my time.
I'm sorry. What did you say? I'm sorry.
I don't repeat my statements.
Oh, please, please, please for me. I would appreciate it.
I said I'm yielding my time to whomever would like to have it.
Thank you very much. Councilwoman Higginbotham.
I just love the microphone. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Councilmember Natoli. I had the privilege of attending the Space Authority Conference, the California Space Authority Conference last week, which if you all stick around to the end of the meeting, I'll report on because it's a subcommittee. But I can tell you it was one of the most valuable conferences I've ever gone to. It was very exciting, and I have decided one of my children has to go on and be a rocket scientist, which they're thrilled about. I wanted to announce about the holiday decorating nominations. That holiday event is going on, sponsored by Parks and Recreation. If you've noticed a house that has gone all out and you'd like to nominate them for their efforts in decorating their house, please call the Recreation Department at 773-7049 or 773-7063. And my last comment is, tomorrow is my one-year anniversary of being on the council.
Oh, it is.
Happy anniversary.
Believe it or not, it's been a great year. Anyway, wow. I wanted to thank the mayor and the mayor pro tem and Councilmember Ravenal, Councilmember Natoli for their support and guidance, because it's been quite a learning experience. And I truly appreciate the staff support in answering my questions. My constant questions, and my weekly meetings with the city manager have been very helpful. So thank you very much, and I look forward to the next year.
You're welcome.
And that's all.
Mayor Pro Tem, do you have anything that you would like
to speak to? I do. I just I had a question for Mr. Dalzite. I've had some comments. Oh, your new microphone is awesome. I've had some comments about the garbage cans that are on the beach. They were wondering if it was possible to paint them the color of the sand so they wouldn't stand out so much. And I know you probably, whoever dumps those probably would like to see them. But is there any chance of that, Mr. Dalzite?
We'll be happy to look into that. I'm thinking that perhaps we might even be able to get the labor free from perhaps probation or some of the organizations where they have people that need to work off community hours. But anyway, we'll look into that and get back to you on it.
Okay, thank you. And I also wanted to comment on the work done on James Way and Shell Beach Road. I noticed that even during the rain, they were scrambling to get stuff done, and appreciate all the... Lots of citizens have commented on, they really pushed forward, tried to get it before the big rain was out, and I want to thank you so much.
Glad you like it. Thank you.
That's all I have. Mm-hmm.
Councilman Ravenel.
The only thing that I have is that if Shelley's going to encourage her son to become a rocket scientist, I encourage him to study hard, because my son's going to be an astronaut. That's all I have.
Well, I want to join in, too, because I have gotten lots and lots of calls from everyone in the community, just very, very pleased with what's going on with our streets. Everyone's very happy. Some were overly anxious for the striping to get in, but everyone's just been happy. I've gotten emails and phone calls, so it's really nice to get compliments. So thank you very much. In addition, I wanted to mention... the fact that we did get a grant for the new restrooms at Dinosaur Caves. And then I wanted to ask a question, because it seems like a while back in 2004, we did receive a grant, I think it was called a trail grant, for about $17,000. And what has happened to that? It was for Dinosaur Caves. And I think it was to come through engineering. I wonder if you could check on that for me.
Okay, we'll get back to you on it. What we're doing is working that into our work program, trying to schedule it in to a time when we can prepare the plans and specifications and the bid package and get it out to bid. But we'll get back to you and let you know what the tentative schedule is on that.
Okay. All right. And is it for about that amount, is it not?
Is that the right amount? I don't have the number memorized, but...
Okay. All right. I'd appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Is there anybody have anything else? Okay. If not, we'll go on to the consent agenda. Is there anything that anyone wanted to pull off the consent agenda?
Not I.
Okay. If not, then I will entertain a motion.
I move for approval of the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda.
Mayor Pro Tem Gonzalez-Gee.
Yes.
Councilmember Natoli.
Yes.
Councilmember Rabinow.
Yes.
Councilmember Higginbotham.
Yes.
Mayor Reese.
Yes.
Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay. Ordinarily, the next item would be public hearings, and those usually start at 5:30. And because we advertise 5:30, I think it would be important to wait until 5:30. So if it's okay with the rest of the council, we will go on to business items. Is that satisfactory with everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the first item is item 6A. Mr. City Manager.
Madam Mayor and Council, business item 6A, which is the only business item on our agenda tonight, is a quarterly financial update. Mr. Eads, our Director of Admin Services, and our Treasurer and Director of Finance, wears three hats, is going to... commence giving quarterly financial updates to the council here at our council meetings. This one tonight actually is focused on
the quarterly report, quarterly update report. Tonight is the beginning, intended to be the beginning of a series of quarterly updates on our financial matters for the city, to make this a regular habit for you all to be able to be informed on a regular basis of important things regarding city finances. As the city manager mentioned, this one is focused on the general fund results for fiscal year 05, and I appreciate very much Lori helping put together the PowerPoint presentation and also to operate it for us. Anita. As I'm seeing this and saw it earlier, I usually try to put together these reports where I just speak in terms of millions and thousands and have triple O's omitted, and I did not do it on this one, and shame on me, because it's too many numbers to show on this screen to expect people to be able to see it. But if council members have your tables there, you can see in here. In particular, I just want to point out a few things. The first column of solid numbers starts with June 21 estimate. That was the estimate for fiscal year 05 that was in place at the time that we put together the budget in June. And that shows, in essence, that expected as of the year, and we're using the budget numbers with slightly adjusted on the revenue side, really, but showing about a $1.4 million carryover funds available for operating matters at the end of the year. Since then, as more information came in and we're able to reconcile some things, we had some real strength in the revenue side. Came in with about $500,000 more than expected. $100,000 or so of that was interest that had not been recorded and assigned prior to that time, as our rates over at LAIF have been going up, and so that's been very helpful to us. But also some a strong June in for TOT and some strong increases in revenues for in Randy's staff for area in the for development. So that came in, and it increased the year-end available balance to $1.9 million. Looking forward into fiscal 06, then we're continuing to... One of the things I do want to comment in here, of the additional monies that are shown as revenue in this current year, about $150,000 of that is money that we had previously budgeted out for 07 This was 06, I'm sorry. This was money that we were supposed to get paid back from the state on a loan, and they paid it back early. You may remember there was a good deal of publicity about that. And in talks with the auditor, he said, no, okay, I want you to report it up here in this year. So that gave a little extra boost to that. So it's not like it's all unexpected money. It's just some of it got moved forward in that case. Going on into fiscal 06, we're showing, again, the carryover here at $1.9 million. Go down the page a little bit on there, and you can see that we have budgeted operating revenues and debt service for expenses of about $12.5 million. And that is, and what this shows is for this year, we've got about $500,000 of expenses above revenues for this year. So one might call it, if we were in business, it would call it a loss. But it was budgeted, virtually the same as we had budgeted before. So, but I do want to point that out, that we're planning, expecting to be using a fair bit of the carryover funds from the prior year in any case, and that we will be doing, as this shows. Then at the end of the year, you can roll that down just a little bit, or actually up into the beginning of 07. By the end of the year, we'll have a balance of about $600,000, which is still better than what we'd expected. But we'll have our continued expenses in here, and actually by the end of 2007, we're showing a projected ending balance at about $200,000, a little bit better than what we'd anticipated previously. One of the things we had not done previously, by the way, was to fully show the amounts of funds that we thought would be coming forward in our labor negotiations, but they all have been accounted for. And so we're still showing that we have money in the bank after this. Not a lot, $200,000. That's on top, by the way, of the 100.
At some time, our TOT is healthy.
Maybe we should talk about that at the budget time.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad idea.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Is there any other questions? Councilwoman Higginbotham.
We're not done negotiating with the POA.
That's correct.
So that would change this.
It would some. There are some funds in there reflected for what we anticipate approximately that might involve. So that I do not expect that to result in a significantly different picture.
Okay. Any other questions?
If I'll go through the rest of the presentation just a little bit. I just want to be sure to stop after we get through those basic numbers.
Okay.
But very quickly on the graph, we have a graph here that shows our annual revenues over the past several years from 1993 on out, and right here, well, the last two dots, if you will, are the budget years, 06 and 07. This one is the current year, which has been updated. From the bottom, we have our sales taxes in yellow, our property taxes in red. This is our TOT, which continues to grow. This is the line I call the sum of the three key taxes. It's the sum of these three. And I think it's particularly noteworthy that for quite some time, this has been on somewhat of a steady, pretty straight line. And that even though this shows a bit of a bump down here and maybe the TOT we underestimated because of the strength that came on late and somewhat has continued to show toward the end of the summer, the sum of the three is still a pretty good place to be. I would not revise that at this time. I think that's probably a reasonably dependable number. And then this line up here is the total general fund line. And again, okay, we had a bump up there, and here we had a stronger than expected last little bit, so that carried this dot up above where that was. Will this come up a little bit? Maybe, but boy, it's awfully hard to predict the amount of activity we'll get for development revenues and some of our intergovernmental revenues. And we just don't know for sure what will happen in the business quarter. Perhaps at mid-year, well, we'll have a mid-cycle review. We'll have a chance to take a look and update that if we think it's needed. I'd rather see that look a little bit like this than have it showing, we got to grow a whole bunch. So this is a better place to be.
Okay. Could I ask a question again? Okay, which one is the property tax?
Red. The red line.
Okay. And then sales tax is?
Yellow.
Okay.
TOT is the dark blue.
Okay.
And this is sort of a light blue or turquoise. And that's the combination of sales tax, property tax, and TOT.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Mayor?
Is there anything?
I met with a new friend of mine over the weekend, Bill Pardini, and we were talking about the taxes that the city collects. And I just wanted to remind the public out there that 14% of the property tax is all that the city gains. The rest of it goes to Sacramento. So when you're thinking, you know, well, gee, I pay $6,000 a year in taxes, or eight or ten or whatever, with some of the new homes that are being built out there, the city does not get all of that money. So that's just a point that we need to, as a city, make certain, because there's a lot of questions about that. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Good point.
And relevant to that, building on those remarks, on the sales tax case, out of the sales tax, it's more like around 7% of the total sales tax you pay. So if you pay a dollar in sales tax, only 7 cents comes to the city.
Right.
Here under the present sales tax structure. And that'll become part of the follow-up to this presentation. The next sheet...
Are there any other questions about that before we move on? Okay.
The next page is the cover sheet from the general fund forecast, a five-year forecast that Mr. Bill Statler presented to you all, us all, back in October. And then we had, along with a report called a revenue option study, those again were presented in some summary form in the early workshops in the budgeting series for this year in the spring. And we wanted to bring forward just a few of the slides that he presented at that time. This one here, I want to say that these numbers at the side and the bars sort of represent, if you will, the fiscal year ending balance for different cases. It's called the budget gap, and we have here three types of bars for each year. The sort of gray bar, I'm going to call this one gray, this one black, and this one cross. The gray bar is what the ending balance would be if maintained at the current level. That type of expenditure has not been done for several years. That runs over a little over $1 million a year. And you can see this suggests that it would get down to about a deficit of minus $800,000 at the end of next year. By the way, our current budget and estimate is in the range of $150,000 to $200,000 on the plus side. And out toward the end, that says we'd be down about $500,000. The crosshatch line reflects the picture of if we did what's called historical level of maintenance CIP, and that's about $500,000 a year, which is about the rough average been done for several years, and what is in fact budgeted just under that $450,000 or so a year on average for these 2 years, and that's what it would look like. And as I said, again, we're looking at, well, that's just about right where we're anticipating to be at the end of next year, and this is what it would look like out here. Around $100,000 to $200,000. The reason, among other reasons, why those are important, well, that says there's not much room for other things to be spending money, whether it's for an additional small project or a significant initiative or a large capital project, parking facilities or old city hall or whatever it might be. So, or a fire station. And so, as a matter of fact, the next slide speaks to that.
Excuse me, Mr. Eads, I have a quick question.
Sure.
This graph came from George Statler's.
Bill Statler, yes.
Excuse me.
Yes.
So when you look at the 05-06 with the bars showing a deficit, is that because of that $150,000 we didn't think we were going to realize from the state?
No, on the deficit side down here, well, let's see. Let me come back. since we are spending in this year the historical maintenance, and this graph said, well, look, you'll be down about $300,000, okay, at the end of the year. We're saying, no, we think we're going to be up a bit. Good part of that reason is because of the stronger revenues that we got back here in 05, and we have some money to carry over. But it does within that reflect, and so you can't really see it because the revenues went from this year back to that year, but they're still available in the two-year period, so it balances out over the 2 years.
Did that really answer your question?
It would seem to me that money would be a deficit. Now we're realizing that sooner.
Yes.
And we are.
You're correct, and that's part of the solution why, in fact, we're looking better in this fiscal year than we had projected, because that loan that we were not expecting to get repaid back until next year did move forward, so that helped us. But it's also because TOT was so strong, and because property tax has been way up, has increased substantially from 17% of our budget revenues to 22%. So really it's a combination of those three factors, and also the council has restrained spending.
Is there any other questions before we move on? Okay.
The next slide, as indicated by Mr. Statler in his forecast, he said that the money that it takes to adequately maintain what you already have, you may recall that's the dark lines that go down deep. So remember, that does not include any new facilities, such as a new fire station, new traffic signals, parking facilities, or rehabilitation of Old City Hall. So in short, a message was, if there's a community interest in pursuing these matters, revenue streams other than the current streams, which appear to be adequate to take care of ongoing operations, but
this
not adequate for...
These
yes.
do not include that.
That's correct. Even if we went into that degree of deficit spending each year. That's right. If there is a desire for any new facilities, as it indicated in his previous remarks, and current numbers seem to bear this out, it's going to require additional revenue streams in the fashion.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
You know, and this can very easily be equated to a homeowner within the city of Pismo Beach. If you build it, you got to maintain it. If you buy it, you got to maintain it. Just like you have to mow your yard every once a week or whatever. We have to maintain our parks. Over the years, your roofs go bad. We have the same thing, only we have many roofs that need to be repaired. So you can really equate what goes on in the city when it comes to our maintenance to your own home. Just multiply it.
Forecast conclusions, as Mr. Statler indicated, and again, our current information suggests continues to be the case. Revenues are likely to cover day-to-day costs plus some infrastructure maintenance, but new revenues will be needed to continue current service levels and adequately maintain existing assets, let alone fund new initiatives. That's the end of presentation. Is there any further questions?
No. Madam Mayor and Council, if I could. So what we wanted to do here was first to give you all a report, give the citizens a report on how we finished off the last fiscal year, because we just got the audited results back. And the good news is we finished off better than we thought. So great news there. And we wanted to start a public discussion and generate some interest in whether or not the city, the citizens, want to move forward with some kind of tax increase to address the constant underfunding of maintenance. And as George said, that doesn't even include new substantial projects like new parking solutions or the old city hall or whatever it might be. I think over the next 4 or 5 months, we here in Pismo Beach need to have this kind of discussion. Ultimately, if the council wanted to put a ballot measure on in November of 2006 for the citizens to vote on whether or not they wanted to have a sales tax increase. There's certain timelines we would have to meet to do that. And maybe I could ask Lori Grigsby to just very briefly talk to us about those timelines, if I could.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rice.
And we may have some public input as to the our reports, too. So,
okay. If initiative was going to go on to the November 2006 ballot, there are some timelines in order for significant time for the required paperwork to fall within the county's deadlines. And a city measure on the ballot, June 20th, July 18th, city council meetings, you would have to come forth with either a resolution or ordinance, whichever would be pertained to that initiative or measure, that timeline. We have to have something to the county recorder's office 88 days approximately prior to the election. And then also included, we'd have to publish the notice of election in June, post the notice of deadlines for filing of arguments in June. The last day to file arguments for or against would be end of July. The public examination period, which you would have, there's several different steps that you have to take for an initiative to be placed on the ballot. So the earlier you start, the better off you are in the process.
Do you at this point, Madam Mayor, if I may, do you at this point know what the cost would be?
No, I do not. If it's with our regular November election, it won't be that much more than what it is now, which is $8,000. We budget $8,000 for our election because we're already are on the ballot for council members' elections at that and mayor at that time. So it would be a small portion.
It would be an additional.
It would be addition, but it'd be a very small portion. I would say probably $600 or $700. Okay. If you did it alone, a stand alone when you weren't having a November election, it would cost us about $8,000 or $9,000.
Okay.
If it was a special election?
If it was a special, like in a June primary or a March, then because you don't have the pool of all the cities at the same time, and when you don't have a pool of all the cities, then it caught the less cities that are included in the ballot, the more it's going to cost for each city. And in November, there's everybody's on the ballot. Almost all cities are on the ballot. So it's a lesser amount of money.
Okay.
But it usually runs us about $8,000.
Okay. And just for clarification for the public, most of the cities in San Luis Obispo County right now are considering putting a ballot measure on the November election for a half-cent increase on the sales tax. So this is why we're having some discussion of it. And if the city of Pismo Beach were to decide to do it, this would probably be an ideal time to do it when everyone else is doing it, and we would have equal sales tax as everyone else would. That doesn't mean it would equal county, because the county's tax, I don't think that they're considering one, but just
per year.
Right now,
sales,
for 1 cent.
For 1 cent for sales tax.
So a half cent would bring us $1 million.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's
Oh, we would get the whole half cent?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Now there are people who will say, well, look, when you raise taxes, then people are not going to buy as much, and so it'll bring it down a little bit, so you would not get the whole additional. For a 50% increase in the tax rate, you may only get 40% increase in revenues, and that's possible. But as city manager pointed out, and mayor mentioned also, with the other cities, this was in Slo County, San Luis Obispo County, considering the additional sales tax, that would mean that there's not likely to be a competitive disadvantage against for businesses in adjoining communities. And already, as it is, the cities and in the county, as well as the county, are at the lowest level of any county and cities in the state. Most others are much higher. San Francisco's combined is up to 8.5 right now. So,
Madam Mayor and Council, if I could, let me expand on that too, since George mentioned that. I had Susan West Jones today run some data for me on surrounding counties. So, for example, Santa Barbara County right now, it's 7. The sales tax rate is 7.75%, whereas here, of course, we're at 7.25. Santa Clara County, which is, of course, up where San Jose in that area is, they're at 8.25% interest. Monterey County is at the same level we're at, which is 7.25. Just to give you some figures, I can just give you just a little bit of an idea. I have been asked by members of the community on occasion, well, what could this additional money be used for? You know, what are you talking about? In fact, someone called me recently and asked me that. Well, first of all, street maintenance. The council has shown a lot of interest in street maintenance in the past, and we've just done quite a bit on streets. But still, if you drive around the city, you'll see lots of streets that still need paving. I could name a bunch of them right off the top of my head, but still need work right now if we had the money, but we don't have the money. So street maintenance comes to mind, both for residential streets and arterials. We've talked before, a number of our stairs to the beach need rehabilitation or complete renovation. For example, the Wilmar stairs. We've talked about in the past, come to council, that hear all these cell phones going off here.
Yeah, please, take care of that, whoever it is.
We've talked before about the Beachcomber stairs, that we need some more money from our general fund if we're going to build those Beachcomber stairs. So there's not only the old stairs that we have that we need constant maintenance or major renovation on, but new stairs we need new money for. Parking solutions for the downtown, various kinds of parking solutions that the council has considered in the past and will actually come back up to you for reconsideration in January. City Council has shown interest in previous budget hearings about renovation of the old City Hall in some form or manner. Completion of Promenade 4. We've had some great briefings by Mr. Delzite's people and Randy Bloom's people on the completion of Promenade 4. We've gone aggressively after grant funding for that, but in the end, and we've gotten a lot of good grant funding, but that will not complete Promenade 4, as you all know. And I'm saying this really for the benefit of the public, since Promenade 4 will require substantial additional monies to be completed out of the general fund, which are not now budgeted. Final completion of both Chumash Park and Dinosaur Cave Park also comes to mind. So anyway, those would be some of the kinds of projects, and I've discussed with the members of the public who have asked me about this.
Madam Mayor?
Any questions for me?
Yes.
We have four public hearings tonight. It's going to be a very long meeting as it is. I would just as soon agendize this for late January, early February, so we can devote specific time to it.
Well, this was not meant to be a lengthy discussion. It was just kind of an introduction and to get a feel, an initial reaction from the council and answer any questions and as it relates to our finances. So I don't think we're going to spend the whole evening on it.
Okay.
Do you have any questions or
reaction? No, I'm very interested in the discussion in late January or February or something. But thank you.
Okay. Is there any questions or anything initially for the council? From the council? I understand. I do want to just give the public an opportunity to speak. I do have one card.
So that things like street maintenance and park maintenance and so on were not possible with these large capital projects that are coming up, I think specifically of the Ventana Fire Station or any work that you may decide to do on the old City Hall area. Those are large ticket items to me, and I think they should be the subject of benefit assessment districts, bonding, grants, something other than the general fund. I'd like to thank Mr. Eads and Kevin Rice for the work they did on this update report. It's badly needed. You remember just the last meeting or the one before, that concern was expressed at this microphone about information that had been not been in the newspapers about our TOT, and I think Councilman Rabinault mentioned it also. I hope that they get a chance. I know we have at least two reporters here tonight to look at this report and update the information they're giving to your many publics, to all of our citizens. It's important for everyone to realize that many changes are underway right now. For example, the 4th Street and James Way Motel, which I think is still called the Mission Inn, should be coming online during this next year. That's going to bring more TOT. There's possibility, I think, of TOT from Dolphin Bay. I'm not sure about that.
There is.
We lost Ralph's supermarket down there in the center, but we gained Ross and now Big Five. Mm-hmm. And those are going to create much more sales tax revenue than Ralph's ever created for us, those two stores. Based on my scientific analysis of the parking lot in the last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. A lot of people are in there spending money. That's going to be helpful to the city government's coffers. I would encourage you to try to continue to do what I believe Mr. Rice is on the and the mayor is on the verge of doing now, and that is in fully informing everyone. I don't think this will be an easy vote. Based on what I know about the people in this city, they're not going to just roll over and say, oh yeah, give them another 3/4 or 0.5% or whatever it is. You're going to have to convince a lot of people. I hope you'll do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the public that would like to speak to that item? Seeing none, we will come back and begin our public hearings. Item 5A, would the staff begin? Item 5A.
Yes. Madam Mayor and Council, item 5A is appeal of a Planning Commission decision. I'd like to ask our Director of Community Development, Randy Bloom, to introduce this staff report. Randy.
Thank you. It's nice and loud now. tonight you have an appeal. There's basically two public hearings. The first public hearing relates to appeal of a 70-foot-long fence located at 188 Seacliff. And to give you a back history of this project, I'll try to do an overview that will kind of give put in perspective of where we're at and where we've been and what the decision is necessary for tonight. 188 Seacliff received Planning Commission approval for a remodel permit a couple years ago. And in a remodel permit or a new house or anything that's placed within the 100-year erosion rate of a bluff requires a coastal development permit. And when we require a coastal development permit, we require a geological report of what the erosion rate is on a bluff. And that's required. And also to verify, and it's required to be done by a certified geologist. What we do with that report is we contact a parallel company that has no interest in the primary company, and we peer review. We have that registered geologist peer review the original report to make sure that that the information is accurate. And in that report, as mitigation measures of what the development should do to protect the bluff and what the setback should be to ensure that there is a public safety and the structure will be intact. In this particular instance, when the original house went to Planning Commission, there was a peer review and an original report. In that report, there's mitigation measures of what the property owner is to do as to how to reduce the amount of erosion and how to mitigate that issue. In that original report, and conditioned with the development of the house, and installed and inspected by the building department, was a set of drain systems in the backyard that basically the grading is, the backyard is graded away from the bluff. There's no irrigation on the bluff side of that. And that grading towards the center of the lot is caught into catch basins and piped to a sump pump, and that sump pump pumps the water up to the street into the regular rebar and holding it in place. The purpose of this fence from the applicant is for public safety, for children in the backyard and pets and et cetera. And also that the approved landscape plan, the drought-tolerant landscaping that was placed and approved along the bluff edge, it would be used as a climbing board that shrubbery would as a climbing area for that. And so the proposed fence that was approved by the Planning Commission is a removable fence, and like all the fences we require and approve along the bluff faces, they are removable and they can be monitored for a 5-foot setback. The Planning Commission discussed this item and approved it on October 11, 2005. A neighbor, Tim Page, has appealed this, citing that a couple of things, as he disagrees with the geology report of the mitigation, and also identifies that we have a general plan policy that nothing should be in within the 25-foot setback area. And we do have that policy, but however, we do have in the zoning ordinance an exception process that we go through to allow items such as fences. And part of that is requiring a geological report and making a finding that it's for public safety. And so the Planning Commission found that the fence was in compliance with those items and the appropriate information was there and approved it. And in your report is a statement response by response. One of the other issues, and it relates to it, and the council has reviewed this before, is years ago in the 70s, when the house was originally built and approved by the Coastal Commission, the Coastal Commission required an irrevocable offer of dedication for an access easement along the side of the house. The Coastal Commission did not accept this offer of dedication, and the time frame that offer was valid has expired. And so today, there is no easement. It's a private piece of property. And so on this particular issue, the Planning Commission found that it was consistent with other decisions they had made, and it met the criteria. The side yard issue that was talked about is that the bottom line is, if someone or an organization would go to court and it was successfully adjudicated and a prescriptive easement would be granted by the courts, the city would enforce that and require the side yard gates be open and that. But the focus of this first appeal is the backyard fence. And that the Planning Commission approved in consistency with prior practices and the zoning ordinance exceptions process. That's kind of an overview of where we're at. The improvements are done to the backyard. The fence is not installed. And typically, anything within the 100-year erosion rate or 25-foot of a rear yard, we require a coastal development permit. And so that's why the applicant had to apply for the coastal development permit to put in that rear yard fence. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Let me add one other thing. As relates to environmental review, all single-family homes up to a fourplex are allowed to go under a categorical exemption, so there's not the need for a negative declaration. However, our zoning ordinance and general plan require that the bluff issue be addressed like you would address it in an environmental review, and if there is archaeological resources that the general plan says is within that, we do an archaeological report on that. So on bluff houses that we do a categorical exemption, we're still looking at archaeological and geological information.
I got a question.
Okay. Sure.
Madam Mayor.
Councilman Natale.
In the exceptions here, it's a 90% see-through non-permanent 42-inch maximum height fences may be permitted.
Right.
If you're going to get a growth on that fence,
you might negate that 90% see-through requirement.
That's correct, and we monitor that. Yes.
So how is that going to be enforced?
We periodically review applications, and we also respond to complaints from neighbors. It's in the conditions, and so we follow.
And a SOAP lawsuit. So I'll give you some quick updates and let you know where we stand on all those. First of all, on the report for the prescriptive rights, prescriptive easement, that went to the Attorney General's office in October, and it's awaiting a decision right now. The staff at the Coastal Commission told me last week that it's a real strong case, and it's there's not a whole lot of doubt from anyone that the ruling will be in our favor. Second item is the Coastal Commission enforcement action for the three non-compliant fences. We'll talk a little bit more about this later on, but that's also being addressed by the Attorney General right now. It seems that since the Pismo Beach Building Department is still refusing to enforce an action referred to them by the Coastal Commission in September, the Coastal Commission is going to take a different approach on that. They wouldn't specify exactly what that's going to be, but we'll all be hearing what that is in the real near future. SOAP, Inc. did file a private lawsuit on Mark and Sandy Ando with the County of San Luis Obispo on October 18th. The lawsuit seeks quiet title of the path property and to have all existing fences removed. Now for tonight's appeal. Once again, there's been deceiving information presented to the city regarding the fences at 188 Seacliff. In the packet I passed out, it's got a number one on there. It says geologic study for 188 Seacliff. The information that's in there, the first couple pages, is right out of the Planning Commission packet from October 11th. And it was used by your staff and the Planning Commission to support why the Andos fences should be allowed. I'd like to call your attention to the last page in the packet. What that is a copy of an enforcement action. This enforcement action, I won't talk about the geologist's name or the company. What it basically says is this guy is under sanction right now and has been for almost a year now. So any information that the city is basing their facts on from this geologist needs to get thrown out. That should be grounds for this appeal to be changed right now. The staff report relied heavily on all of this information, and this guy right now has his license held up. The reason it's been held up, you can read on if you want, but he prepared a similar report for another blufftop house, and he's currently being charged with acts of misrepresentation, negligence, unprofessional conduct, and therefore subject his license to discipline. So anyways, that should be reason enough alone to deny this appeal, but it's not. We have other reasons.
Excuse me, could you tell me what date this letter is?
I don't know. It's on the website. I just pulled it. But if you look through the package, you'll see dates that's highlighted in there. All those are dates when the package was approved and of when the action has taken place.
Oh, May 25th, 2005?
Yeah, it's all in there. There's a lot of stuff in there to read. So I'd like to move on. As far as fence number one, a.k.a. tonight's item number 5A, it was approved, and it's not consistent with land use policy LUE2, which states development along the bluff shall be set back a minimum of 25 feet from the top of the bluff. The proposed fence will be 6 feet from the edge of the bluff top. Additionally, Coastal Access Policy 30211 says development shall not interfere with the public's right to access to the sea where acquired through use or legislative authorization. This should be construed to protect the potential for access rights. Everyone knows about the path. If there's potential for prescriptive rights, then they must be protected. We formally ask the City of Pismo Beach to immediately insist that since the potential for these access rights exists, that no structures should be allowed in the contested areas. This includes new construction and existing structures. If the approval of fence number one in the diagram, and I'd like to refer you now to packet number two. There's some pictures in there. I got a couple extra minutes, you said, right? I had 5 minutes? I'll wrap this up quickly.
Okay.
Now, what we're looking at in this packet here, in between the purple lines, it's the same diagram that's up there. I just gave you a blow-up of it. In between the purple lines is our path.
You'll see up at the top that fence number one is a little red jagged line that goes through there. You'll see that the red line goes through the purple line, which means that that interferes with our path. And if you look at the Planning Commission's decision, they said that clearly there could be no interference of the path property for fence number one. As you can see on this diagram, and it's their diagram I used, it clearly goes through there. So there's existing violations of the local coastal plan for non-permitted structures in the coastal zone, and those are three fences that are blocking. And you can see that in the picture there. There's the solid blue fence, there's a black wrought iron fence in the middle, and a chain link fence in the very rear. There has never been a coastal development permit for any of those fences. Now, Mr. Bloom will tell you they're not.
It happened 200 yards from the Endo's property. Nobody knows for sure what caused this slide, but it is certainly a coincidence that a 40-foot by 8-foot chunk of bluff collapsed about a year following development on the bluff, not just bluff top lot, just west of 188 Seacliff, which included perimeter fencing and landscaping. Please don't allow any more development around this area, especially in an area 6 foot from the bluff top edge. It will only encourage more problems. As you know, the area that collapsed was not subject to foot traffic and can happen any time without notice. There is already a sea cave directly below 188 Sea Cliff, so any additional interference is just asking for trouble. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item? This is public hearing at this moment.
Gary Jackson, 137 Kuyama. I just wanted to say I lived in this community for over 40 years. I've walked down that trail several times. The people in this community, my mom, are retired. They want to relax. They're challenged by this. This is wrong. Those fences should come down. You know, I just hope you're with the people, the majority. If you drive around the neighborhood, everybody has signs up, please stop this. If you drive by his house, there's cameras all around this house. There's a reason why he has cameras. He's scared. Please help us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item? And it would be helpful if you would fill out a speaker's card. Where are they? Up on the table. Are there some there? Okay.
There are some here, and mine is strictly spontaneous. I'm Darlene Tunney. I've lived at 161 Paddock since 1969, and I've often walked this path. I miss it very much. Thank you. I hope you consider us.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item? And this is an appeal on a fence.
Rick Rensick, Santa Fe Street. Again, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. When you're dealing with this issue, as we all deal with a lot of issues, I would think that we have to look at the big picture. We aren't just looking at one component, and I hope you are really considering that in your decision tonight. As a captain with San Luis Obispo City Fire Department, one of my responsibilities is to, I'm in charge of, and I've coordinated from its inception, a program called CERT, which is Community Emergency Response Team. It has now been so successful that it's gone countywide. One of the things that our motto for CERT is doing the most good for the most people. And it's unfortunate that although I applaud Mr. and Mr. Yando's successes, I am absolutely appalled by their arrogance and their need to cause so many people so much grief. And if there's so many issues that are going along with this, I really encourage you to, number one, on item 5A, is to overturn this issue. And just in trying to expedite your time to maintain item 5B when it comes up. Thank you very much for your
time.
Thank
you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item?
Hi, you know me. My name is Emily Jackson. I have a son who's over in Iraq right now, and he has a son, and he served there. And he wants to come home with his son so he can enjoy the sun sets. And right now he is sending money home to us so we can fight this in court. And I think that's wrong. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item?
Good evening. Marshall Ohilski, I'm the attorney representing the Andows.
Okay.
I'd just like to address a couple issues that were raised in the by Mr. Page. First of all, I want to make sure that everybody understands the fence that's before you now is not blocking the prescriptive easement argument. That's not an issue in this fence at all. This fence is the fence that's next to that portion. That's the reason staff separated the two applications. So the prescriptive rights discussion, irrelevant to this fence. I was very appalled when Mr. Page brought up an issue of the geologist being under sanctions. This is America. People are innocent until proven guilty. There's been nothing proven about any negligence or any incompetency or the other words that Mr. Page used regarding the geologist. So I think that conversations with the Coastal Commission, what the Coastal Commission said, what the Coastal Commission is intending on doing. The Coastal Commission has done nothing to this point. There is a lawsuit filed by SOAP for the prescriptive easement, which, again, is not part of this fence. But relative to this fence, the Coastal Commission has not addressed this at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address this item?
Hi, it's Mark Yando. I'm the property owner.
I also have some handouts for the council.
Do you happen to have one for the clerk that you're doing?
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep my comments specifically to this fence because I think that's what we're here to discuss is item 5A. First of all, we have read in the staff report on this item, along with the discussion specific to this appeal, and we agree with it. On page 4, they identify section 17.102.050 as a land use guideline to permit this type of fence within 5 feet of the bluff top. The closed fence is between 6 and 10 feet from the bluff top, and it meets the functional guidelines of height, 90% transparency, with no concrete. On page 7 of the report, it identifies that Geo Solutions recommended fencing for safety and to minimize the amount of disturbance of the bluff. And on page 5, it also summarized the fact that the bluff, the Geo Solutions said that the bluff will offer additional protection to the bluff edge, so it's in conformance with what we've been asked to do the entire way. On page 3 of your package, in response to the appeal for the safety fence by Mr. Page, we have read and agreed with the staff comments for the cause of appeal by the planning staff, which basically indicated there was really nothing in that appeal that warranted overturning the 5-0 Planning Commission decision. Statement 1 was relative to land use, and Statement 1 has been shown by planning staff and the city attorney to be consistent with land use policy. On page 13, fence meets Pismo Beach City Zoning Code. On the geologic reports, the reports are done by a licensed geologist with peer review. And there's a new site visit performed on November 28th. And in there, in the package I gave you, is a letter that came from Geo Solutions on the 30th of December. And just on the bottom of this page, in many cases, I've spent a lot of time going up and down the streets of Pismo Beach and Shell Beach. And this fence is extremely consistent with what goes on. And if you move on to page 4, these are from the Coastal Records, and these are the homes on Spyglass and Indio. And it's kind of hard to see with those little red circles. There's pretty much fences on every single home. And if you go to page 5, there's a table. On Indio, there's 30 homes on the ocean, 27 have safety fences on the bluff top. On Spyglass, there's 14 homes, 13 have safety fences. On Sea Cliff, there's 7 homes, 4 have safety fences. And on Shoreline, there's 10 homes, and 7 have safety fences on the bluff. Now, on that one picture, which is actually of the slide that Ms. Page mentioned, you can see fences throughout. I'm not going to get into speculate for the slide. We have our own opinions, but it is definitely a safety issue. It's fortunate nobody was injured in that. On page 6 of my handout, you'll see the city-installed fences on Ocean. There's a city-installed fence on Ocean at Capistrano. There's one at Morro, and there's one at Montecito. All these are within 5 feet of the bluff top. All these would be similar to protect the right, you know, make sure nobody falls over it. On page 7, there's a few more. Pelican Point, Shell Beach Road, and continuing through that. And then just in closing, relative to this fence, fence 1 is consistent with the general plan. There is no CEQA impact. It's consistent with fences that are up and down the coast of Pismo Beach. And I request that you affirm the Planning Commission 5-0 decision. You know, we have a right to protect our property, and that's all I have to say on this one. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item?
Sorry, one at a time. My geologist, GeoSolutions, is present.
If there's any questions by council or staff or the geologist.
Would the geologist like to make a comment?
John Kammer, GeoSolutions Engineering Geologist. I did author those reports and did the geologic studies at the 188 Seacliff, and I'm available for any questions that you may have.
Okay. Did the council have any questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item? Okay. Okay, did the appellant have any other comments before I close this public hearing? Okay. Public hearing is now closed, and I'll come back to the council. Did the council want to have any further discussion or have any questions of the staff or the city attorney on this matter at this point?
Madam Mayor?
Yes. Councilman Ravenel.
If there's any portion of that fence that comes into the disputed easement, I would want it to stop at that 10-foot. I don't see any reason why Mr. Yandow should be excluded from consistency. It is consistent up and down the bluff, these fences. And I am not going to overrule that consistency. I think that some of these issues that come up are born of emotion and are brought forward on emotion. I think it's a shame, but there's nothing I can do about that. So therefore, I am going to support this, and I can see no reason to override the Planning Commission's decision, and again, its consistency. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other questions?
I have a comment.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. I think that in this report, the staff report, it's huge. I have the greatest compassion. This isn't easy at all. I truly lose sleep over it. I was talking to one of the council members this morning, and I said, I was up at 3 reading this. It's so very hard on us.
The problem is she called me.
Now, when I'm serious, please. I truly was up reading this that time, because you're all so very important to me. I truly am just your representative, and I'm trying to see both sides here. And then I'm reading through this packet, and I'm seeing where the planning manager, Johnson, stated that the bluff top fences that the applicant is asking for, that the fence is not unusual to this area. In fact, they're stating that there's numerous ones on Seacliff. And that's Carolyn Johnson. I mean, we rely on her. There's photos of it that there are fences, such as the one that the Andals are putting up. And then I think that my biggest concern is when our city attorney advises us that we could go into litigation. I have all these constituents that I have to take in consideration that their tax dollar would be going towards litigation for a small area, and I don't think they'd be for it. And you probably wouldn't want to pay for litigation for another area of town. And so I have to take all that in consideration. So I sadly tell you that I have to uphold the Planning Commission's decision.
Thank you very much. Councilman Natoli or Councilwoman Higginbotham?
As Mr. Rabinow pointed out, this is a real tough situation on the council.
I know that a lot of the people out there are saying, well, we're going to see how they vote and then we'll catch them all at election time. To me, I think that's a total cop-out. But I have to... you have to excuse me, I have sort of laryngitis. I know that a lot of people, in fact, I have people in my family that have used that many, many years to go down surfing, etc., even taking kids to another part of town through there, my grandkids. It was a good thing while it lasted, but there's such a thing, too, as property rights. I have a daughter that lives on the bluffs too, and they have the same type of thing on their backyard. They have to have a safety fence, and we don't want any kids to have an accident there. Now, after Randy tells me that that's strictly going to be used for a climbing station for the plants that they're going to plant along there, which would be a deterrent for anybody else that in there, so it's like a, you know, don't go past this point. So I see nothing wrong with that at all. I sympathize with Mr. Page and everybody that's, you know, doesn't want to see that happen. But you still have to look at the property rights of the owner that wants to protect himself against any kind of, he has guests over at their home, and they got to put...
Look at the... map that Mr. Page gave mm-hmm. us, and I believe in the minutes, and I couldn't find it because this is 9,000 pages. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that chain link fence was proposed to go on a post that's existing across the pathway. Am I wrong?
That's the second appeal.
That's number two. Okay.
This is
so
the first appeal that
fence
is.
The fence is going to stop right at that corner.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That was my question. Yeah. Thank you. Because when I saw that and,
yeah.
going to the whereas, okay, thank you. I would concur with the Planning Commission. I would think that it is important to maintain the safety and to maintain the bluff, and I'm comfortable with the fact that he's not using concrete. I think the Planning Commission looked at everything. I'm comfortable with the geology report, especially with the peer review, and I would... vote in favor of this
one conference. Okay, and I too agree. I looked at the findings from the Planning Commission and I think they covered everything, and I think the biggest thing for me, it's the protection of life and safety. I think where the placement of this fence is, it's very important. And I think that there's been caution taken in terms of protecting the bluff top so that there won't be more erosion. So I, too, have to uphold the Planning Commission's decision.
Are you ready for motion, Madam Mayor?
I am.
I'd like to make a motion that a resolution of the City Council of the City of Pismo Beach upholding the Planning Commission action approving Coastal Development Permit 05-0146A for a 30-inch high, 70-foot-long chain-link fence parallel to the bluff at 188 Seacliff Drive, and that's APN number 010-505-414.
So approving the resolution?
Yep.
Okay, is there a second?
I second it.
Okay, there's a motion and a second.
Councilmember Rabinow?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Gonzalez G?
Yes.
Councilmember Higginbotham?
Yes.
Councilmember Natoli?
Yes.
Mayor Reese?
Yes.
Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay. We're ready for...
Madam Mayor, could we take a short break to go to the restroom?
Okay. Very short, because as you said, we have a long evening.
Yeah, I know.
So, would You want five, as much as 5 minutes?
Sure.
Okay, 6:17.
No more than five.
6:17, back here. Item 5B, and this also is a public hearing. Staff, please.
Madam Mayor and Council, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Randy Bloom, who will, our Director of Community Development, who will introduce the staff report.
Thank you. Tonight is the second public hearing relating to the same piece of property at 188 Seacliff, and this relates to a, for better terms, a 42-inch high fence that is 48 inches wide that is located between 182 and 188 Seacliff. I gave you a background at the first public hearing relating to this and elaborated a little bit on. At one time, the Coastal Commission had required irrevocable offer for an easement, for pedestrian easement in this area. That easement was never perfected, and today there is no such easement. And as I stated earlier in the previous public hearing, is that should that issue go to court and be adjudicated, the city would have removed any fences within that area. But today, at this moment, there's no easement exists, and therefore the decision tonight is based on the evidence presented. The applicant wants to provide a fence that attaches to two posts, his neighbor's post and his post, that would block the area that originally was a pedestrian pathway. The Planning Commission, during the public hearing, discussed the issue, and the meeting went quite long, and the Planning Commission discussed a couple items. The first item was the geology reports, and if it was adequate, should there be supplemental to that project that was as part of the remodel project, and those were installed. The area in the side yard presently drains to the backyard and to a catch basin in the backyard, and is pumped up to the street and out to the city outfall line, and it doesn't flow over the top of the bluff. And I think there was a little bit of confusion at that point at the Planning Commission meeting. And with that point, the Planning Commission made those four findings, and as a substance of that, the Planning Commission denying the coastal development permit. And so before you, the applicant, the property owners, has appealed that decision and is here tonight and has made a previous presentation. And staff is here to add any additional information the council would request. But what it is tonight is the recommendation from the Planning Commission would be to uphold the Planning Commission's recommendation for denial of the appeal. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Does the council have any questions of staff?
No, I don't have any at this time.
Okay. With that, I will open the public hearing, and will the appellant come forward, and you will have 5 minutes.
I passed out packages again during the break. And this is relative to the fence. So if we go to page 2, a couple of things I just want to point out. What you see on page 2 is a parcel map of my lot. And what you see on there is that in 1959, at the corner of, in question between the chain link fence and the bluff top, there was it was 34 feet long. When my project was started in 2003, it was 17 and a half feet in distance, and currently it's 16 feet from the chain link fence to my property. So in that corner where the pathway or trail exists or does not exist,
It's coming 18 feet. So if you go move on to page 3, my lot was originally 10,900 square feet long or large. It's currently 8,900 square feet. So I've had erosion of over 2,000 square feet, or close to 20% of my lot has eroded away. So the erosion is real. There's a letter from Twin Cities Survey. The surveyor of record who did a record of survey, and we found the lot lines were off, which actually started a lot of this whole issue, because originally when the lot lines were off, the one on one side of my parcel, instead of having 6 feet, we've got about 1 foot, which basically caused a change in plans, and that moved everything to the other side of the house. Moving on to page 4, these are the findings by the planning commissioners themselves. First finding was based on land use policy, and items 2, 3, and 4 were based on geological and talking about maintenance methods, appropriate erosion controls, and geologic information. Now, at that planning commission meeting, the package that was submitted by planning staff was in excess of 100 pages. The geology report itself was 100 pages. The addendum that was published is another 40 to 50 pages. So it's pretty easy to see why it's pretty easy to miss some of that information. So to help alleviate that, I've had GeoSolutions do another site visit to my property last week, and they published a letter that hopefully you received by email. If not, it's in your package, specific to these findings, and they'll be here to speak about it. Moving on to the next page, page 5, on land use. This is the same land use as the other fence. It's to nothing more or less applies. This is a bluff. This is a safety fence. It's actually going to be about 9 or 10 feet from the bluff, 90% transparent, and it's being attached to two existing structures. One, the wood fence that was put up on my property when it was originally built, and the other on Mr. Williams. And we have a letter from Mr. Williams stating that we can so attach to that fence. So to install that fence, there is zero additional disturbance to the bluff. The maintenance method is to replace that fence as necessary. The landscaping that has been recommended has been put in, and the drainage control that was recommended has been, the soil has been moved. So if we move on to page 7 is a copy of the letter from GeoSolutions. I highlighted a couple points, and the couple points is that going back to the 2003 report, they basically indicated that bluff top activity needed to be minimized or stopped across the entire bluff to preserve this bluff top. Mr. Page pointed out that this is a fragile bluff top. We absolutely agree it's a fragile bluff top. And we have a licensed geologist that was peer-reviewed that said you need to mitigate it. To mitigate it, direct drainage, put landscape in so we can grab those roots. And then after you do that, block it off so nobody can get on. And so that's not only is it going to block it from the public's use, it's going to block my use. So, you know, this is basically be done on an erosion basis. On page 8, there's a picture. Many of you have been able to get to the property. But out here, it kind of shows where the distance was 34 feet. It's now 16. It shows a barricade the city installed at some later, that bluff top going over. And there's some, certainly, again, the geologists can deal with that. And on page 10, what I've got is if I had an earth movement similar to that occurred over at Spyglass, that whole area gets wiped out. The city barricade gets wiped out. My fence gets wiped out. Anybody, anything that's remotely there is going to go over the edge because it's only about 8 feet to the edge. On page 11, just close to summary, relative to the maintenance, it's a wrought iron fence. It's powder coated. It's installed by attaching the two existing fences. There's no soil disturbance. There is no fence maintenance required. And it will be monitored to ensure the 5-foot setback was part of the condition. I also like to point out, as part of the condition on the original Planning Commission recommendation, was that if litigation does find for the pathway, we agree as part of the permit process to remove it. Anything that's being done is being done. We know that perhaps we may win, we may lose. We don't know, because that's what the courts are going to decide somewhere out in the future. Relative to erosion, the erosion was, quote, exacerbated by the access, human and animal. Fence 2 eliminates this access. The controlled water and runoff has been changed. Ceanothus has been installed, which is considered to be the drought-resistant plan per recommendations. And we're basically trying to do what the city has done in many places, such as over on Indio and Florin, which is put up a fence, restore it to natural vegetation, and leave the bluff alone, seeing as everybody's got a laissez-faire approach to the bluffs these days. Moving on to page 12, relative to CEQA, because the reason I bring this up, it was raised by Mr. Belcher at the last meeting. This project is a 42-inch high fence, 48 inches wide. There are no site constraints or other factors, and it's exempt from CEQA. And then in closing, We believe this fence number two is consistent with the general plan, the zoning ordinances, and the land use. It's, again, it's identical, other than the fact that there's some argument or discussion over who, over the rights of that property. It's the same as the other fence. It's consistent with private and public bluff top practices. There's no negative geological impact to the installation of the fence. In fact, the fence is what is required to implement the recommendations by the geologist to preserve that bluff top. We actually don't believe there's any basis to deny this fence on these grounds, and I request that you approve fence two, and would like to reserve some time for Marshall Hilsky to speak at the end.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item?
Well, the intent is clearly to close the path off. I don't think there's any question about that. I think Mr. Yando stated that. He wants to close the path off to pedestrians, to animals, to whatever he wants to do. The path has been turned into a dog run. I don't know if you saw it on the last slide. He's got St. Bernard dogs, and he's real clear about wanting to have that for his dogs there. Dogs clearly will do much more damage than any person would ever do out there. But really, there's a, over and over again tonight, you've heard, look at the geology report. I don't want to go into detail. I'm not going to mention names. The guys in the audience here, don't rely on anything you're reading in that report. If you do, you're being naive. There's a reason that the action was taken by the California Board. Until the violations are corrected out there, and they need to be, the city of Pismo Beach is responsible for carrying out, orders from the Coastal Commission, unless you don't think the Coastal Commission's right, until those violations are fixed. Don't let anything else be built out there. All it's going to do is just complicate matters more. If these appeals are, don't go in our favor tonight, really clear, we'll immediately take it to the Coastal Commission. So it'll be a long time before any fences are built out there. And if they're built, they'll be built without permission. So don't let them do this. Don't let them block out the path.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item?
John Cameron, GeoSolutions, the geologist for the site. I think you have my brief letter in there in your packet regarding the findings. And he, Mr. Yando did put some ceanothus in, and the drainage grades back into the slope away from the bluff. And the fence has no impact on the geology because it's existing fence posts. But if you have any questions for me, I'm able to answer those.
Do you have a question?
Well, do you have a concern, based on the geology report, do you have a concern about it being used as a dog run versus foot traffic?
I do. I did not know that it was used as a dog run, but it's trying to keep animals and people away from the bluff area, and so we're set back so many feet from it, and I am concerned that there is a lot of activity, but I don't want to get into politics here.
I'd like to clarify once again, this is one of the many misrepresentations that Mr. Page has made.
I have a dog run, and the dog run is not back at the back. It's not back at the 25 feet of the bluff. It's to the front side of the property.
Yes, please.
Marshall Ohilski. I'd just like to close with a couple of comments, if I could. First of all, there's been some representations made that something on this site has been built without permits or has been...
Would you please state your name again?
Marshall Ohilski.
Okay. And you are?
The attorney for the Yandas.
Okay. Thank you.
First of all, there's been some comments made that there's been items placed on the site without permits, or they've just appeared in the middle of the night, basically. Everything that's been built on that site has been built with a city-approved permit. The front fence, the buildings, everything. There's nothing out there that's been any violation issued by the city relative to not having a permit. So everything out there is legal according to the city's permit process. The second thing is that it keeps coming back on this one item to the fact that there's a belief by some people that there's a prescriptive easement over this portion of Mr. and Mrs. Yandow's property. And there may well be. But the point is that that hasn't been adjudicated at this point. My client's position is real clear, that there is no prescriptive easement. Our legal position is that there's no prescriptive easement. There was an offer to dedicate that expired. There's no question about that. Whether or not Mr. Page and his friends have acquired a prescriptive easement needs to be adjudicated. Until there is a decision of the court to that effect, this property is entirely under the control and possession of my client. And I would just like to extrapolate that a little bit. By this theory, if you follow it to its ultimate end, anybody could file a lawsuit, no matter how frivolous it is, and stop any project by saying, we have litigation pending, so you shouldn't approve this project or you shouldn't approve this fence. There's a condition of approval that says if, in fact, the adjudication is found in favor of a prescriptive easement, that this fence would be removed. And my client has never disputed that fact. He just disputes the fact that there is a prescriptive easement there. I would just like to close with this. I think that all the conditions of approval and all the findings made on item 5A apply to this particular item, 5B. I really don't see how you could make a finding approving 5A and make a 180-degree opposite finding disapproving the fence that's the subject of 5B. So I think for consistency purposes, you need to make the same decision on both, which would be to uphold the appeal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So is there anything else that the appellant would like to point out before I close this public hearing? Okay, thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing and come back to the council. Is there any questions that the council has of staff now that we've heard from the appellant, et cetera? Okay, is there any discussion?
Under discussion, Madam Mayor.
Yes.
I hate being in this position. But, again, it must be done. You know, it's almost like, if I were at war with my neighbors and wanted to put up this fence, it's almost like a slap in the face. You know, well, I'm going to at least put up this fence and that'll certainly close that pathway off once and forever. You know, that bothers me. I don't know if there are tactics that are being played. I don't know if there's one-upsmanships that are at play here at this. But I don't like it. The neighborhood doesn't like it. Mr. Yandow doesn't like it. Nobody likes it. You know, I guess what I'm concerned about, Shelley and I went back and stood next to that 3-foot-high, what is that white fence there in the back, and it is only 7 feet. And we are having some blufftop erosion problems in that area. I think that the reason that I would approve that fence being installed is that it would certainly negate the need or the want for anyone to want to come down from Spyglass Park on that side because they really couldn't go anywhere. There's no place for them to go. If the fence wasn't installed, then people from Spyglass Park wanting to come over there would have access to Mr. Yandow's backyard. You know, I think that bottom line out of this whole deplorable mess is that there is no prescriptive easement today. I don't think anybody is in.
The light would be turned on.
A picture of where the fence would be. And then we can continue to talk. So, Councilman Natoli, do you have any comment? I just want to see it as we're talking. Is that the fence?
Well, no, there's two.
That's not it.
Left-hand side.
I know, that's not it. Oh.
Let me see if I got
a
better.
It's highlighted like it is.
That's the third. Yeah, that's the 7.
I'm saying it's confusing.
Yeah.
You want to close your eyes there, City Attorney? Right there is where the fence is, correct?
No,
No.
No.
We'll have another map up here in a second.
Thank you.
Okay, I got it. Okay.
That may work. It's where that yellow... There you go.
Okay. No.
It's upside down now.
The fence we're talking about is right here, right at the very edge of Mr. Yando's property.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the front of his house is over here.
Okay.
The existing fence is right here in alignment with his garage and with the back, somewhere about the back of the house. The 100-year erosion rate swings through like this. And this is the area at the very tip of his property that we're talking about, a 48 inches wide by 42 inches high. And
you know, Madam Mayor, I've also, Catherine Williams, a wonderful lady that's lived in this community, part of the Williams Brothers clan, and Dave Williams is her nephew, who is going to tear down the house next door and replace it with a new home. And I'm just wondering, I asked Catherine to give me Dave's phone number, and he did, and she did, and it was the wrong number. If anybody, Mr. Yandow or Mr. Page, if anybody has Mr. Williams' phone number, I would be happy to meet with him to see if maybe there aren't some arrangements that could be made with his property. Don't know that could happen, but if you don't ask the question, you don't get an answer. So, I don't know. I'm trying to make life... better.
Shouldn't be doing this publicly.
I know. I know.
Okay, I just wanted to see it while we were talking. Is there any comment or questions that Councilman Natoli has or Councilwoman Higginbotham has?
I would question is if we've been having the bluff erosion there and we're going ahead with the putting that safety fence there, then if you have erosion, you're going to have the erosion all the way across that property, even where that gate's going to be. So I would think that would be an added safety precaution until we get the ruling from the Coastal Commission.
That's correct.
So I'm going to have to side in with Bill on this one.
Okay. Councilwoman Higginbotham.
Well, in looking at the geology report, I know there were some concerns about that, but the city requested a peer review, and the peer review was done and came up with the same recommendations. It's very difficult to vote on potential rights. It puts you in a terrible position, and if prescriptive easement rights do exist, then the court will rule in favor of SOAP and that gate will be torn down. But we have to allow the court to make that decision. Somebody in the audience said, you know, you have to do the most good for the most people, but if it puts you in a position of doing something potentially illegal or puts the rest of the city at risk of litigation, we can't do that either. It's a terrible position to be in. I share your same words, Councilmember Ravenal. And there are conditions of approval. And if the courts come back and say it's prescriptive easement, then that fence comes down. Until that time, I believe Mr. Yanda has the right to put that up. And I believe that I need to rule on that in his favor as well.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, I think at this point it doesn't make any difference what I say. But I had just one question for Mr. Bloom. With the prescriptive easement, should the court find that if the council votes to have that fence up, should the court find that fence should come down, would that damage the bluff in any way?
No, not this fence. This fence is being attached.
Is there a motion maker?
Is there a motion?
Did the mayor make the motion?
I make all the motions.
Well, who wants to make the motion?
I'll make the motion, but I don't have the verbiage in front of me, so bear with me.
Okay, it's to adopt the resolution to uphold the appeal.
Can I say it like that?
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
Okay, I'll make a motion to adopt the resolution to uphold the appeal.
That's correct. And for clarification, we'll use the findings of the previous approval resolution.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Councilmember Higginbotham?
Yes.
Councilmember Rabinal?
Yes.
Councilmember Natoli?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Gonzalez G?
Yes.
Mayor Reese?
Yes.
Passes 5-0.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is 5C. And this would be also a public hearing, and this is regarding amendments. And would staff please present this item?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Madam Mayor and Council, public hearing item 5C is amendments to the 83 and 98 zoning codes, in particular to deal with parking for restaurants and tandem parking for residential uses citywide. Approximately 2 months ago, the Council held a joint meeting with the Planning Commission, and at that time you discussed a number of items, and one of the foremost items was you directed staff to very quickly come back through the Planning Commission to you all with a recommendation on how to address some of the parking issues that were raised at that joint meeting, and we've done that. I'd like to ask Randy Bloom to give us the staff report and the proposal.
Thank you. Tonight is a public hearing, and to reiterate the city manager's comments is that on September 20th, the council and the commission held a special joint meeting to discuss parking, in particular requirements for restaurants. At that meeting, there was a lot of discussion on our existing parking ordinance that basically states that restaurant parking requires one parking space for 100 square feet of gross floor area, the total building. And the desire was to go towards more of a customized approach, where it really related more to the occupancy of the building than the gross square footage. And so staff, prior to the workshop special meeting, had made inquiry to various cities in California, and there's a survey in the staff report, and the survey was submitted during the joint meeting. The survey basically, there's a lot of variations, but in that survey it reflected to a proposed change in more customized in looking towards the seating area and the occupancy of a restaurant. And the proposed change tonight on restaurants would be to change it from calculating at one stall per 100 square feet of gross floor area to calculating the space at one space for every 75 square feet of floor area dedicated to eating, waiting, and outdoor dining areas. And what that refers to is, in the Uniform Building Code, when you have a public assembly area and a restaurant where you have a seating area, the Uniform Building Code talks about and allows for one person for every 15 square feet of floor area. And that's how, when you see a sign above the door saying the occupancy load is 115 or 80, or it's based on that relationship. If cities have looked at that relationship and says, okay, what does a normal passenger car accommodate? That's five people. If you times 15, five occupants in a vehicle, that relates to one parking space, and it relates uniformly to the occupancy of the restaurant. And so through discussions with the Planning Commission found that that was more of a customized approach, and a lot of cities go to that. Now, a lot of cities prefer what we have, and a lot of those cities are cities that have a lot of growth potential in them that are growing horizontally in concentric rings with land values that aren't as expensive, and that cities have programs in their downtown that they don't allow on-site parking, that they have to incorporate into a city program. So our our approach to a customized is that if a large restaurant would like to accommodate an addition, we would only look at the occupancy level, what that building would yield. The second thing that was brought up, and we've been discussing it for quite a while, is the allowance for tandem parking on single-family lots when certain conditions are met. For the lot, you can only build a height of 15 feet. So on these steep lots, all you have is a garage, an entry, and a staircase that goes down to a second level. And so we found that if we allowed a tandem on those under certain circumstances, that it would allow for a living room or an entryway that would be more presentable to the street. And so the Planning Commission provided some findings to allow for flexibility that a person could apply for a tandem parking place, a tandem garage in a single-family residence, if the findings could be met and be reviewed by the Planning Commission in the public hearing, or in certain instances where it is ministerial under the director's findings, that they'd have to make the same findings. The third major part of the change to the ordinance is to change for the requirement of the garage parking space to be located 20 feet from the front property line to a requirement that is a distance 20% of the lot depth, not to exceed 20 feet. What that's saying is, for years, historically, in Shell Beach, we used to practice that on the shallower lots. The Planning Commission would look at 20% of the depth for the garage apron in front of the house as a setback, as a reasonable accommodation for development. And in recent years, we've been processing variances and exceptions because a majority of the houses have followed that over the years. Now, one thing to remember is that if a house has a front garage setback of less than 20 feet, that area wouldn't qualify under a second dwelling unit as that parking stall, because a required parking stall is 10 by 20. And so if you had a house in Shell Beach or some other part of the community that had a less than 20-foot setback on their property in front of the garage, they couldn't count that as that one parking stall required for a second dwelling unit. This component is trying to bring in to law what we've been practicing for many years, the deal. The minor part of the restaurant part, there's one other minor revision, and that relates to restaurants and hotels. And restaurants and hotels, the existing ordinance requires one parking space for over 5 seats and maximum seating capacity as defined in the Uniform Building Code. The proposed change is to increase that to one space for every 150 square feet of dining area. Because of the co-use, you have a hotel and a restaurant, and to liberate that a little bit. That's the basic components. The first component is going to the seating capacity, occupancy capacity of a restaurant, allowing tandem parking under certain circumstances in garages, and to change the requirement for the front yard setback to be a 20% of requirement of the lot debt to allow that opportunity. That's in a nutshell. The proposed amendment affects the 83 zoning ordinance and the 98 zoning ordinance. The environmental document that's with it has extra items in it that won't be discussed tonight, that will come later, relating to other zoning ordinance issues. But tonight is strictly parking relating to restaurant, tandem parking for single family, the garage setback issue, and the restaurant parking. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
My only question at this point is, what kind of notification did people get on this?
We notified during the special workshop, and we sent out a general circulation at the Planning Commission level, like we typically do for an amendment process. And we have been in conversation with a lot of the restaurateurs in town.
That is?
Yeah.
What?
With the restaurant owners.
Okay.
And discussions
but how about
with
the
them.
Residential end?
We noticed it like we typically do in the paper with a larger ad. We didn't do a survey of the whole community, if that's what I'm trying to say.
I have a little bit of concern about that because I hear that all the time from the community is that we don't really notify, and I heard that even from Tucan Terrace on this last public hearing we had on the zoning change. Mm-hmm.
I would like to see the public take more responsibility for themselves by at least going online and looking at an agenda. If you don't have a computer, come down and get a copy of the agenda at the front counter. You know, we're in a very critical time period of the city of Pismo Beach. We are going through some major, major changes. And I want the community to be involved. And for us to try to notify everybody on something that may or may not pertain to them, I just think is cumbersome, and we shouldn't do it.
I have a comment. I believe there was a, if I may.
Certainly.
Thank you. I believe Marilee Hyman had a suggestion about putting the agendas on Channel 20.
Yes, something like that, maybe. And anything like that would
well,
be
if
fine.
If that's possible and not expensive. I mean, we're running something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't know what's involved in that,
mm-hmm.
but...
Mm-hmm.
Laura's smiling. Okay,
that involved? That might be a way. That's what I'm asking for, is I think that there are some important issues on the agenda, and this is one of them, I think. We're making some changes in a residential area. I have more concern about that. I also want the people in the business community to make sure that they've had input into this. So,
Mr. Bennett, I was just going to say, Madam Mayor and Council, we can go ahead and look at putting this, not the whole packet. Obviously,
right. Yeah.
But
just
we can
agenda.
Put the agenda items certainly on Channel 20. Yeah. I mean, there should be no problem with that so that the public knows what's coming up.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
You can do that.
Yeah, there you go. Great idea.
And,
okay.
And of course, you all did approve. You have approved, and we're doing it, the televising of Planning Commission meetings, so the public can always watch those, too. And
absolutely.
This has come before the Planning Commission, right, Randy?
Yes.
I have a question.
Sure.
Certainly. If I can jump. Under the general requirements for parking areas, and it says a residential use may not generate more vehicles than can be accommodated on the site per the requirements of this section. It's page 6, item 5C.
Page 6.
Exhibit A, the 83 code.
Five,
very bottom.
That's in the existing zone right now.
Okay.
Yeah,
my question is, then... given, you know, you have three or four teenage drivers or something, if somebody applies for a license to operate a business out of their home, how do we approach that?
We review all aspects of that business as to, you know, is it, do they do deliveries? Do they, how much, if it's a clerical, how much UPS traffic? All those aspects of the business we review. And if there is a piece of that business that generates a lot of traffic, then we question that. But to give you another example is that, and this is a classic example, years ago in Turlock, I received a complaint from a neighbor that a gentleman had 7 cars, and he had two in his garage, two in his driveway, and the rest was out in front of his street, and he was working on cars all the time. And so I went out on the complaint and found out that each one of his children had a car, and he was working on his car. And I asked him, I says, you know, if you're working on it that much, maybe you ought to start your own garage. And he did. he's been very successful over the years. But you can get situations, the size of the family and the age of the family, that you can get an accumulation of cars. It's there for a while and then it leaves, but you can. I mean, my own family when all my children are home, we had five vehicles, you know.
But that's not an enforceable
no,
state
no.
code. I mean, if you have eight or nine kids
right.
and can afford to
have now, if they're parked over 72 hours and they're, you know, a lot of times you go out and tell, you know, be courteous to your neighbor and get them in front of your house and everything. But there's instances where when families grow, during that time period, you're going to have more vehicles than you can accommodate.
But most of my question was about the home business.
Yeah.
Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is there any other questions from the council to staff? Okay, with that, we'll open the public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this item?
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of council. Tony Spinelli, Pismo Beach fan. They got long.
Isn't that great?
Kind of poke you in the nose. regarding the restaurants, as one that has built a few restaurants in this area, I've always been against that ordinance that covers the total square footage, because you have, you know, when you construct the walk-in coolers and, you know, the lines and so forth within the back kitchen,
to improve their properties and increase the size of their homes without having to tear the place down or destroy what they have. And there are some places that probably should be torn down. I think that the Planning Commission and the city looks at those issues. But I think that this is a good move for the city of Pismo, and I think it will allow people to improve the appearance of their property instead of just having the two-car garage appearance on the front, or putting a garage in the back that's not really usable. So I think it will go a long ways for helping people out. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item?
It takes so long to...
Wow. Okay. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing and bring it back to the council. Does the council have any comments, questions?
I don't think that Randy could have done a better job in conjunction with the Planning Commission and the joint meeting held here with City Council. It's exactly what this community needs. It's exactly what the restaurant community needs, and I'm full support.
On behalf of Randy, I'm going to support Randy.
It's been a long time coming to stand in the
closet in my eyes.
Yeah.
I concur.
Okay. I was just a little worried about driveways being too short, but on the residential areas, but.
Yeah, remember Rudy's car broke down, though. Remember the old Rudy Mobile? Not too many of them around now.
Okay, well, I will entertain a motion.
Well, I would move to waive the first reading of the ordinance and introduce by title only forward ordinance to the December 20, 2005 City Council meeting for second reading and adoption.
Second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Good job, Randy.
Thank you.
5D. Mr. City Manager.
Madam Mayor and Council, I would request to move item 5D to the 17 January date certain City Council meeting.
Fine with me.
And the purpose of that is we need to do some more internal staff work, and we also need to allow some other folks to comment on the proposed new development impact fees.
Okay. Thank you very much. Then, with no objection, we will do that.
Okay.
City Clerk says we need a motion for that.
For the posting purposes, if we can, if Council could make a first and a second for a specific date and time, which would be January 17th at 5:30 p.m.
I will move that we move this agenda item to a date certain. That would be January 17th at 5 p.m.
We have a motion.
5:30 p.m., I'm sorry.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
OK. Okay, we have one more public hearing, 5E.
Madam Mayor and Council, item 5E, we'll see if Randy's still batting 100% here, is a, he'll introduce this staff report. It is, subject of it is to decline a proposed donation from the Catherine Eldwayan Family Trust. Randy?
Thank you. Tonight you have an item in front of you that the Catherine Eldwayan Living Trust has offered the city a dolphin's structure that was located in her front yard and requested that it be placed in Ocean Park that was renamed Eldwayan Ocean Park after Neb Eldwayan's death in 2000, who was a prior councilman and mayor of the city of Pismo Beach. The Park and Rec Commission has developed a public art guidelines, and it's a process that the Park and Rec Commission take a look at it for public benefit, and then also have a separate committee look at it of local residents. And this particular project went through that process. A guidelines of the public art is that the specifies that the transportation, installation, and the cost relating to maintenance be the responsibility of the art donor. And this particular offer, there was no funds allocated by the donor for the installation and continuance of that. And as such, the Park and Rec Commission found that without that, is that they would reluctantly forego the recommendation for accepting this donation. The public art that
travel probably 100-150 feet, and if it's anything less than like $500, I'll be happy to pay for it. It's not that much, and I think it would be a good addition to the park. So, and I, as far as maintenance, I think you just hose it off every now and then for the birds. That's about it. So that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item?
Marilee Hyman, 2141 Shoreline Drive. Madam Mayor, members of the council, I was part of the committee that did look at the structure, the sculpture, and Carolyn Johnson, who headed the group meeting, did take a poll. Raise your hand if you like the structure and you think it would be suitable in the park and you'd like to see it there. Assuming there was no cost to put it there, raise your hand. And it was more than majority. I mean, people like the sculpture. It would have been nice in the park. However, the cost of putting it there was a great concern to all the people. And I think that if it were $500, I don't think there'd be a huge discussion, but the cost of it is probably far greater. The estimate was somewhere around $2,000, and when I relayed some of the issues that we ran into in Dinosaur Case Park in putting any kind of thing in there for the public, where the cost of the installation for just the pad to put it on far exceeded the cost of the item itself. So we were estimating closer from $3,000 to $5,000, as far as $5,000, to not just move it. I mean, somebody would probably volunteer to just move it if that were all that were the consideration, but the consideration was further than that. It was that when they talked about people putting little kids on things to take pictures, that the likelihood was very high that their damage would occur. And when they said they do it to even live animals, bull, elephants, seals and stuff, I go, well, okay. So there was a concern to protect this, even to the caging of it or to elevating it. And when you're talking about pedestals and the anchoring of that, you are looking at considerable expense. And really, that was the issue.
Good, thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing and bring it back to the council.
Well, we have 500. Do we have 5,000? No. I agree with staff's concurrence for the reasons that they gave. And I would like to have a very nice letter. You know, we don't want to offend certainly the people, but just a nice letter declining the offer.
It would be nice if we could advertise it and see if we can get some donations, some volunteer to maybe donate for the cost of that. I think if the public knew what your intention were, I think that they would respond. Because we've been getting a lot of good response for dinosaur caves.
But I think the property has been sold, or I think it's been sold, they need it gone out of the yard.
Yeah, I think that really didn't fit the description of what.
I think there was some staff concern too about not only just the cost in moving it, but just the potential in maintaining it, and there's rough edges, and that there could be a liability hazard as well.
Kids getting injured on it.
But you know, maybe the city could just take possession of it and put it over in the corporate yard or something, and then as we start developing more, because it probably wouldn't be that bad with a really nice, high enough wrought iron fence around it, and maybe a couple of lights shining up on. I don't know.
I liked your idea of the letter.
I like the idea of the letter too. Let's go back to my letter.
Okay. So, is there a consensus from the council that we will write a letter and adopt? The recommendation of the committee.
Yes. Do you need a motion on that?
The RBC.
So yes, you do.
There's a resolution. Yeah. We'll adopt the resolution. I'll entertain a motion to adopt the resolution.
I'll make a motion to adopt the resolution of the Pismo Beach City Council declining the Catherine Eldwain Family Trust donation of art.
And I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to adopt the resolution.
Yep.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay, the next item is a business item, which we've already done, and so then the next item would be the city manager's report.
Madam Mayor and Council, I'd just like to thank you all for recognizing our Public Works Department and the work that was done on paving and slurry sealing the streets in the city, and particularly I'd like to recognize Greg Ray, because who is our associate civil engineer, who did a lot of work on that project, ramrodding it, supervising it, and making sure it was done properly. Absolutely. So I'd just like
good
to
job.
Recognize him.
I'll get back to you on that. Good. I'll give you information in the written form. CVB, and I don't know if Councilmember Natoli would like to talk about the monarch butterfly, but we discussed that at the meeting. And I wanted to let you know that we want you to shop in Pismo Beach, and the Pismo outlets have extended holiday hours. Sunday through Wednesday, they're open from 9 to 9, and Thursday through Saturday from 8 to 10. So there
that's
we go.
That's a good thing.
Isn't that a good thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's all I have. Thank you.
But that was a good report from CVB about the state tourism talking about Pismo Beach in their. Was it their report? I forgot exactly what it was. Did you remember that? In their news release, that was it. They mentioned Pismo Beach's Clam Festival. Okay, if there's nothing else.
That's it. I know.
Kaboom.
I've had my
meeting will be adjourned.
That was pretty good.
We are.